This is URN.
The Film Show Breakdown.
So The King is a film that's on Netflix. Who made it? David Michaud? I don't know how to say your name, David. I'm so sorry.
He listens in every week.
And it's basically an adaptation of Shakespeare's Henry IV, Part 1 and 2, and then Henry V as well. But it really plays about with that. So it's very loose. It stars Timothée Chalamet as Henry V and Joel Edgerton as Falstaff, Robert Pattinson as the French Dauphin, and quite a few other people make a really good appearance as well, like Ben Mendelsohn and Lily Rose Depp. It's about Prince Hal becoming Henry V of England, his reluctance to become king, his kind of elevation from a sort of wayward lifestyle into becoming a political leader. And it's most famously really about him feeling that he has a birthright to France, and that then leads to the famous Battle of Agincourt. And so I think that's everything I want to say.
You mentioned that it's about his transition from a wayward lifestyle.
Yeah.
Now, you were complaining outside that this wasn't handled very well at all.
No, I didn't think it was, because I think in parts one and two of Henry IV, this is because I'm an English student, so I've seen all the Shakespeares.
We all have.
It's a requirement to get into a course, as you see all of them. And basically, they make a huge deal really in Henry IV, part one and two, when Hal isn't the king and he's just Prince Hal. He's like living a common life, and he's very much into quote-unquote debauchery, so you know, drinking a lot, engaging in sex with prostitutes and things like this, and a big part of that is his relationship with Sir John Falstaff, who is a sort of very vain, fat, oafish man who kind of leads Hal astray into this.
You don't
lifestyle.
Get that impression though.
Yeah, no,
because he's supposed to be this war warrior sort of guy.
Yeah, do you know why? It's because he's meant to be dead.
Oh, like, brilliant.
In Henry V, he's dead. He's not remotely a war person or anything
it's
like
so
this.
It's so confusing,
is that
this film.
Joel,
yeah,
I would, it was Nick co-writer.
Yeah, I would like to say that this is not my Falstaff.
What's bizarre about this section of the film is that it's done in a very PG way for a 15 rated film. Like they could go really in depth with this instead your implications of Timothée Chalamet's character being a drunk is that he sleeps a lot and long hair. That's literally it. And that's the only way you can tell that he's some kind of rebel character.
I think what's really sad about that as well is, like, from Henry IV you get the idea that Hal is kind of, he's obviously hiding from kind of being king a little bit, and like he does have that kind of melancholy to him, but there is still kind of like a fun atmosphere to it. And this was just like him just being depressed
this
a lot
film
and
isn't
angsty.
Fun.
And then there's no change.
No, there's one scene.
You're just like, this film isn't fun.
It's not fun.
No, it
there is one
it
scene.
Where every ounce of joy it could have had away from it.
There's a 30-second scene where it's done in slow mo, where he's smiling while drinking. So sort of like, oh, okay,
that
this guy's
one,
a character.
Is he supposed to be like? Cool. Are we supposed to like? He's supposed to be likable.
I think he's an anti-hero.
Is he inspirational? I don't get
He's kind of. So, like, Hal is kind of meant to
be.
Is he the big dog? Okay. This is because there's a scene where someone approaches an army. This is why Jamie's written "big dog" at me on a piece of paper. Someone approaches an army trying to challenge Hal, and his brother replies to him, and Henry, it's Percy Hotspur, sorry, who's approaching the army, and he says, "Why is the small dog yapping? Where is the big dog?" And on "where is the big dog?" you expect a very huge, athletic
dog.
Dog, or at least qualified and experienced military man, and out pops tiny Timothée Chalamet, and it's the funniest thing I've seen.
It's bizarre how Timothée Chalamet is like this absolutely brilliant sort of like sword wielding kind of knight, and even though I feel like he's probably, I don't know where he's learned these skills from.
No.
You don't look at his physique and say, oh yeah, this guy. This is
the
guy.
The
he's hard to take out, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like it's so easy to just kill this guy.
Was he miscast? Is that what we're getting?
Yeah. Yes.
I was going to ask that.
Yeah. Yes, but it's the only reason why anyone would see this film.
Yeah.
So stunt casting at the same time.
I think he's very good at the melancholic side of everything. But I think the problem is that Hal is meant to have a conscious choice where he thinks, okay, I actually need to go back to being a bit more princely. And he's still got that reluctance to leave the lifestyle.
Yeah.
But it's that kind of transition of going, okay, I know I need to become king, and the death of John Falstaff that then actually makes him become the political leader he always could be but was hiding from. Whereas this is just kind of Timothée Chalamet is depressed and angsty for 2.5 hours and there's no change.
Do you guys think anything would have changed if they sort of switched the roles and Rob Pattinson played
Possibly, yeah.
I think Pattinson's probably a bit too old.
He might be.
I don't know how old Chalamet's supposed to be in this film, though.
We had a Holocron a while ago, and Tom Hiddleston was Hal, and that actually wasn't too
that would
too
work.
Bad. He was a good Henry.
Because I'd imagine that would have been the natural thing to do, is play the French Timothy Chalamet.
He does speak French in the film.
The person fluent in French, and Robert he does
Pattinson.
Speak it.
Oh,
Chalamet.
I would like to just genuinely shout out that I love that they got around Robert Pattinson clearly not being able to speak French.
Yeah.
Despite him being the French Dauphin, by him just saying, please speak English.
Yeah, yeah.
It is so ugly.
Just sounding like Eric Cantona, it's bizarre.
It's amazing, yeah. It's,
what do we think of Robert Pattinson's performance?
He knows that it's a bad film.
It's the best thing in the film.
He knows he doesn't believe in a single word that he's saying. No. And I think this is a common theme throughout the film, where it's like, if you have any of the main actors, they don't have any belief in what they're saying. But I think, like, the supporting cast, which are full of, like, English character actors, are actually giving it their all. They're sort of believing in what they're saying, because this is... You can tell that a lot of the supporting characters in this film are Shakespearean actors.
You can tell that
they're used to this kind of writing and content and, you know, the setting. Timothy Chalamet, I don't get why he keeps on doing period pieces when he looks like such a modern day 2010s kind of actor.
I actually think he's got a period face.
I always
say he looks like a
for the right place.
Orphan, so I do joke.
No, but
about
the thing
that.
Is, like, he's the right place for, like, Call Me by Your Name. That is a period film that's set in the 1980s, but he still gets to do the cool sort of like. Cool, chilled out kind of vibe that he has, and he does it really well. And calling by name, he's brilliant. But this kind of film is just not for him.
But that's what we were saying earlier, where it seems as though he's trying to force himself out of that sort of young adult role.
Yeah, but he gives like the same-ish performance.
But that's what I'm not trying to draw comparisons between Timothy and Leo DiCaprio, but that's what Leo DiCaprio did immediately after Titanic, where he tried to take a lot of like quasi-serious roles to, like, you know, not be seen as the young heartthrob for forever. So what's good about this film?
Yeah, I was gonna ask that.
Like, there are some good supporting performances. Ben Mendelsohn is class, but he just gets killed off too early.
Yeah, because he's Henry the Fourth, so he has to die for Timothy Chalamet to become Henry the Fifth.
But he seems really more interesting as the king, and more king-like.
More interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And he basically has one scene.
He is meant to appear
dialogue.
More king-like to Henry at first, because that's what Henry's got to try and live up to.
Lily Rose Depp as well.
I was gonna say she's very good. Yeah.
But it's too little, too late in the film. Yeah. She first appears over 2 hours into the film, and by that point, I've lost interest in the whole film as a thing.
What are our final thoughts?
Don't waste your time on this film. But I think if this is your jam, then I think you might get something out of it. But if it is your jam, you've probably seen this kind of film done better before.
Right, yeah, that's a really good way of putting it.
Yeah.
I think as well, like, don't be afraid to watch the Shakespeare. Like, I know that people think it's a very impenetrable language, but actually it's a lot of flowery... I say this as an English who's looked at this for ages, so I know I appreciate I'm a bit biased, but it is a lot of flowery stuff that really you can get the message of very easily. Like, if you can still get the beats of what's happening regardless of how poetic the language is. And there have been some really, really good productions of this stuff that you can totally, are there to be accessible to a general audience. That's why they've been made. That's why people finance them. And so really, you know, try and watch something like that if you're interested.
We're going to be discussing one of the most loved films out of possibly what is often seen as the most loved year for film, 1994.
Yeah.
This is The Shawshank Redemption. Would anyone like to quickly go over the plot?
I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen this film, a good 5 years or so, but it's one of my favourites. So I think I can just about remember the plot. It's about this guy called Andy Dufresne, who's wrongly sent to prison at Shawshank, and he befriends a man called Red, played by Sir Morgan Freeman. And that's about... He's American. So I just call people a sir.
But he should be.
He should be a sir.
And some bad things happen to him, so he plots his escape, which may or may not happen depending whether or not you've seen the poster of this film.
We are going to be discussing full spoilers anyway, so fine.
Well, it's spoiled on the poster, you know what happens.
It's basically a general... In fact, in the film, it's supposed to be a surprise, and it's such a fantastically revealed one.
Yeah.
We have a whole flashback sequence where instead of playing up the suspense of, oh, will he escape, which would have been if we saw it in real time, it's instead, how did he escape? It's like solving a mystery.
What's interesting, though, I know that Mark Kermode talks about this a lot. He says about how the ending is different from the book to the film within it, with its final shot, which is obviously the one, if you've seen the film, where Morgan Freeman and Tim Robbins find each other on the beach after they both come out of Shawshank. And that's not in the film. That's not in the book. In the book, you're asked whether they'll see each other again, sort of thing. It's sort of like
they left it. It's left on a clear.
Yeah, they left it happier in the film, and I feel like it is more effective that way. That you get that sign of hope, and I feel like that's a really important theme in this film. Yeah. Sort of like friendship and hope. I feel like that's the overwhelming sort of thing that you. I mean, otherwise, it can be like quite a grim, uncomfortable watch, I guess. Yeah. Because there's some. Quite disturbing images in this film, especially halfway through, and with the scene with the older gentleman that I can't remember the name of, but
Brooks.
That's a brilliantly devised film scene.
It's our first time out of the prison for that scene as well. Since Andy Dufresne was sent there, and I look at the outside world is not one of happiness and hope. It's one of Brooks, and
what's brilliant with that is that it's also mirrored in when Morgan Freeman's character comes out of prison as well, which is why it works so well. That's why you need that ending scene.
I think every element to the film is just expertly done. You know, from I think the way they developed all the characters individually, you know, I think was really good. I like how it plays out. You know, as a like. I know that it's a very platonic friendship, but the way it's played out, you could also see it as a romantic film where they end up together and, like, you know, it hits the beats
of a romantic film, but in a platonic way.
And that's really good and refreshing because, you know, you don't want to see, you know, the same old all the time. So I think it does that really well.
I feel like the performances in this film is brilliant, and I'm glad that this is the film that all the, like, especially Tim Robbins and Morgan Freeman are remembered for. Like, both of them have won Oscars for other films. Neither of them won for Shawshank, but it's still Shawshank that you think of.
Yeah.
Like, Morgan Freeman, I feel like, is one of the best film performances of all time.
What did he win his Oscar for?
Million Dollar Baby. That was, like, 10 years after this, and it was sort of like... He's quite old. This is his last chance.
That was like a Leo DiCaprio Oscar where they were just like, yeah, we kind of have to give it to him. We're just going to wait for the next best film that he does and then just give it to him.
Like, he was nominated after that for Invictus, but it's sort of like, you know, that was sort of his last chance in supporting anyway as well, which it's easier to give it to. But anyway, back on this film. His performance is brilliant. Like, it's flawless. And it's one of those ones where not only can you not imagine him, anyone else in this role, it's sort of like he really elevates the film to being cult classic, brilliant masterpiece kind of
the
film.
The narration as well is so and
it's important that he's doing the narration rather than Andy Dufresne.
Yeah, because it's like a story about Andy Dufresne.
Yeah.
Almost like a
rather than told from
tale.
His perspective. Yeah,
but yeah, you're right. You know, when the film was released, it didn't do that well. Both. You know, the box office
because it was released at the same time as Forrest Gump and Pulp Fiction. They were all out at the same time.
It's a bit political, but it's also a very interesting thought piece, like think piece.
Shawshank?
This criticism I'm about to say is that the reason why it didn't do so well is because it was showing prisoners in a sympathetic light.
About prison reform.
And at the time in 1994, or 1993, when was it released?
Yeah. 94.
I know that's one of the... Yeah, 94, sorry.
It was 95 in this country, though, I believe.
I got confused with the Oscars. But yeah, the reason is because at the time, people were very much against the idea of prison reform. Mm. It was very political. So people... were just criticizing this film, and you can look at all reviews at the time. They were saying that they didn't like the portrayal of the characters. It was unrealistic to see the characters as human.
That's what the film did really well in terms of making it sort of a redemption story for both characters. Especially, I like the scene where Red, you know, when they ask when he, you know, he goes into apply for parole one more time, and instead of sort of making up a very flowery story as to why he feels like he's changed, you know, he says the truth. It's such a good scene. He just says the truth and says, you know, I mean, there's quite a few swearing in it, but it's such a well done. So I think it does well in just being an honest film. It's not trying to make you like it. It shows the dark side of
prison.
It really does. Mm-hmm. Every single side of prison, the friendships you make, the enemies you make, the guards, it shows every single part of it in its most truthful form.
Can I just say, because I haven't seen this film for a really long time, so I don't feel I can talk about necessarily specifics. But things I do remember, I feel that Frank Darabont is one of the best directors of Stephen King specifically as well.
Yeah, The Mist as well, I did.
The Mist and Green Mile as well. Which is an amazing film. I love The Green Mile. And I think similarly, Thomas Newman's score, which again, he did The Green Mile, and like Thomas Newman's one of my favourite composers for film. I think
American Beauty.
Such a distinctive, great style. He really like gets the tone of the film really well as well. I feel that he's very, I feel that score is almost park that sympathy.
Yeah,
and then obviously the scene where they play all the opera stuff is,
I was
going to
say, that's
well.
Like when the way he plays the music and everyone just stops and listens, it's a bit like dramatic, you could say, the idea of everyone just stopping to listen, but
it hammers home because you don't hear music in
that's
prison,
the thing.
Yeah.
It's believable because it's so suddenly alien to them that they would all be like, oh, hang on a second, like I can kind of believe it.
And like Red says, I don't know what that Italian lady was singing about, but it was like the most beautiful thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Even though he's on good terms with everyone, like the warden and the guards, he's had this little act of rebellion just to give his fellow prisoners like a taste of freedom for a second.
The movie plays with those ideas, you know, really well. I think at the end of the film, you know, that I forget the exact location of the place in Mexico where he does end up going to. It's sort of seen as, you can see it as a sort of paradise or heaven for them. I think it plays really well with those ideas of, you know, in prison, you know, that's sort of their hell. And when they receive salvation or whatever, you know, that's where it is for them. So it plays along those ideas very nicely. If you want to see it as that, you can also just see it as the movie as it is. But, you know, I feel like there's a deeper philosophical angle to this film that, you know, if you can definitely investigate if you want to.
It's like a fun exercise. Is there anything that you want to be critical about the film? Anything you want to...
Not that I can remember. I mean, it's hard because it's been a long time. If I watch back, I'd be able to see flaws in it or how it would be made differently if it was made today. There's things it could be improved on. Like, I think the visual look is a bit grey, I guess.
Very, very.
But I think that's the point.
Almost.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was being really, really picky, it would probably be maybe they showed us a bit more of Andy prior to prison.
Yeah, we don't see the contrast.
We don't see, I mean, we see...
We don't find out much about the crime. It's just that scene.
Yeah. That's deliberate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's some ambiguity, but I think for the most part, I'd say that he was innocent.
They make us decide what we think of Andy based off of his prison, you know, look, as opposed to... I think that's very well... That's clever, because I'm pretty sure the book would have done that. It would have done... differently in terms of introducing him to us.
Yeah, that could be spun as a positive to this.
Yeah, so I think they did it really well, because maybe we wouldn't be on his side if he was not a decent human being before prison. So I think that's well done.
Do you feel that's as well, though, like the idea that once people go to prison, that's one of the first things you see about a person?
Yeah.
So, like, especially when it, because it was so
disliked.
There's
the scene where they all run to the gate and they're all judging him, and Red says, oh, he's going to be he bets on Andy to be the one that cries, and he's like, doesn't make a sound for the entire night.
Yeah.
So it does talk a lot about,
but even the idea that someone outside of the prison, because we were talking about the fact that people didn't like the idea of seeing prisoners as people.
Yeah.
The idea that then if someone outside of the prison were to look at Andy Dufresne, the first thing they would be like, he's a prisoner. So then we have to start seeing him through the prison.
We have to rebuild him
first.
As an actual character.
Yeah, and then build him up before, and then we can go into the past.
So
maybe that's a different angle.
Final thoughts.
Watch it if you haven't seen it already. What are you doing?
You know, actually, I think I'm going to go, you know, read the book again, because I don't remember how they introduced Andy Dufresne, because I think that would be very interesting if they did introduce him in the film and then he wasn't likable. Would we still root for him?
It might be more of a direct redemption story if that was the case.
Yeah.
Because he's very likable by the end when he's helping prisoners out.
Yeah.
And he's like set up the library. He's definitely like come a long way from when he first entered.
Yeah.
And he wasn't really talking to anyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've not seen it for like a decade, but I need to see it again. I know it's an amazing film.
Yeah, fair enough.
I just know. So.
IMDb says so.